It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of September. It's stunningly over. We'll look at the big picture. We'll look at Game 7. And we'll try to get through it together. The Jazz season has come to an end. And it's Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. But today is it's a hard one. I got to tell you, I'm just in a stupor. I usually have organized notes on what every show is going to be and outlined. I couldn't get myself much to write down a note. I know what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the big picture. Then we're going to get into Game 7, and then we'll do. But it's a weird one. I actually, mental illness now has the word depressed being like a very meaningful word you have to be careful about. But I would say that, you know, I'm just kind of depressed. Like, I'm stunned. I just sat there last night, came home, and just kind of stared at things and woke up this morning and just stared at things. And, you know, last year in Houston, frankly, we all went out for dinner and we kind of knew the season was over. And the year before, you probably had an idea. This was different. Obviously, you're not as for me personally, I'm not as connected to the team because of the distance, but also just you didn't think it was over, right? We thought we were advancing. We thought we were playing the Clippers. I was pretty intrigued by that series. They're better than we are. I didn't know if we'd score, but I knew that they played a traditional big and we wouldn't have to deal with Jokic popping and Gobert could have his impact. And I was ready for that. Like, and I was excited to dig in for 36 endless hours of preparation in a manner that, like, that's kind of my rush. And now I don't get to do it. Now it's over. And we don't even know when we're playing next. It's just such a weird feeling today. And I don't have a zest. Like, I'm sure you feel the exact same way. Like, there's just not a, usually I have a little bounce to every day and a little bounce to what's going to happen. I certainly don't have that bounce right now. It's just lacking. So, you know, it's just a bummer. And I'll try to separate the frustration of the loss, which I think is legitimate and real, and then where the franchise sits and then what we have going forward. We'll continue Locked On Jazz. I'll take some time here at some point. This has just been such a wild, I need to just go. I need to get in a car and just go. Hopefully not live, into the wild, but I need to just go. So I'll do that at some point here. So from a big picture standpoint, it's really an unbelievable season, even without COVID, without Black Lives Matters, without the Bucks protest. The Jazz make these off-season moves. It's as anticipated a season as we've probably ever had. And then it doesn't ever really happen the way we anticipated. Bojan Bogdanović is exactly what we thought he was going to be. He's probably better than we ever thought he was going to be. He's just incredible. He's just one of the best shooters in the league. He's able to do all sorts of things. But Ed Davis went off the aging in the NBA happens fast. Really, really fast. We all think it's a progressive thing. We've actually now seen it twice. I think this is what happened with Ed Davis. We'll see if he bounces back. And we actually probably could have used him. And Joe Johnson, we saw it with. Like, it actually, I've talked to Kevin Pelton a bunch about this. Aging in the NBA is not progressive. You actually go from being able to play to not being able to be able to play. And Ed just looked like he lost his bounce. One of the great offensive rebounders the league's ever seen. And there was nothing statistical that said that that could happen. And he just didn't quite pan out. Jeff Green, minimum salary, like, seemed like a great addition. Multiple skilled in multiple positions. And, you know, in retrospect, maybe he should have been our backup center. And that's how we should have used him. But with everything else going on, I'm not sure we ever got to that. We move on. Dante doesn't quite take the next step we all thought he was. that we were excited for him to take. He never quite got healthy. He never quite got confident. There was, in my mind, there was like this really telling moment where Dante went down on a play. I'd have to go back and find it. And he wasn't actually really hit. You could just tell, though, from his reaction, how little confidence he had left in his body ever staying healthy and believing it. And suddenly we have to rebuild this entire team on the fly. And they and Quinn does a pretty masterful job with it. They get Tony Bradley ready to play. They move George Niang from a small forward to a power forward and suddenly find a way for him to be a valuable asset to the team. They acquire Jordan Clarkson, who's kind of this nomad, selfish, one-on-one player. And what ends up happening, but he ends up becoming like a bona fide six-man of the year threat. And we rebuild this team. We've become the number one offensive team in all of the NBA. We're like right on the verge of this stretch of basketball to find out how good we are. Like if you go back and remember right before COVID, we're going to find... And then the world stops and our team explodes, it seems, right? COVID-19, Rudy gets it, Donovan gets it, they have a spat. There's Zoom calls that Rudy won't get on. Donovan and Rudy aren't talking. Like it's a it's unsalvageable. It's a disaster. And then they go to the bubble and the bubble becomes, I think, something that we'll maybe look back on over the years as this is the kind of the key part that rebuilds the franchise. Like we were in not great spot, right? Like it's hard to tell how bad it really was, but it doesn't seem to be good. And Rudy's comments last night after the game about the fact that he's proud of the group, particularly him and Donovan coming back together, leads you to believe that a lot of that was real. I mean, they've basically admitted that a lot of it was real. And so they go to the bubble and they have these bonding together moments, whether they're about Black Lives Matter, about whether or not they're about basketball. And they come together in a way that's, you know, Donovan Mitchell, I'll go to war with any of these guys. Rudy Gobert's comments about how proud he is, like they actually have come together in a third version of this team, because then Quinn Snyder basically had to rebuild this team an entirely another time because of the fact they didn't have Bojan Bogdanovic and they didn't have, and had to rebuild kind of who they were as a team. And so they did a pretty good job of it. And Donovan, so the, like, there's the third version of this team this year. And in this third version, like Mike Conley thrives until last night and Donovan and they figure out how to play without Bojan. I mean, that's a big loss. That's an $18 million loss on yourself. I mean, it's a big deal. And it's a major shooter and your second leading scorer, all sorts of stuff. And then maybe the singular most important thing that took place is that Donovan became a star. He's just that special. And the Jazz will offer him $100 million in the offseason on extension. I assume he's going to take it. To not take it's kind of an asinine, insane move. Like, unless he's, like, it never really has been done. And so we have this incredible star leading our team. And we are going to have to, we'll get into this over the next month or so. We'll have to adjust our roster and change some things because he probably needs the ball in his hands at a pretty high level, and he's frankly small, so he needs bigger players around him, and we got to figure out what's best for him. And the Jazz and Donovan became really a special, special player. In his third year in the NBA, which is about when he does it, he did it late in his third because that's actually when they do it, and he did it post-bubble. Like, this is the next step. And he's a star. We haven't had a star like this since Stockton Malone. I'm not sure we've actually had a star like this. It's like it's illegal to say, like, oh, not include Stockton Malone. But we actually haven't had this kind of star. I mean, he could score 30 a game next year with no difficulty. He's really great. He also had 9 turnovers last night because he's still a third-year NBA player. That's what Jason Tatum's doing right now in Boston is incredible as a third-year player. But if you really start looking around the league, like Chris Paul and James Harden, 10-year veterans, will make the plays tonight in that Game 7. you know, the veterans of this league carry the playoffs, and Donovan came pretty close to doing it. So from a big picture standpoint, it was really an incredible year with multiple evolutions of the team. Like, we made these offseason moves, we're all really good. None of the guys were exact, and this is actually how it works. None of them were exactly what we thought they were, at least in the sense that Boyan, I think, was better than we ever expected him to be. Mike Conley turned out to not really be John Stockton point guard, intellectual point guard, moving. He actually is a scorer. That's what he is. Mike Conley's a scorer. And when we asked him to be something else, it was difficult. And then we've got to figure out how he works as a scorer. Like, there's a bunch of... And we frankly then on a minor level use the bubble brilliantly to find out who Rajon Tucker, Mia One, and Jarrell Brantley are, and Juwan Morgan, and might have these pieces of the puzzle that we'll need to have be a piece of this team as we move forward when we pay this much money for our primary guys. But the biggest picture of all is these guys got through what evidently, if you just kind of read the quotes last night and the quotes all week, all month, a very important stretch together. I'm really proud of the way we've been able to handle the last 6 months as a team, as human beings. A few months ago, I probably wasn't in the right spot mentally to go out and play with my team. But we found a way to make it happen, to be able to have my teammates support through these few months, especially since we're in the bubble and everything that happened. It was really something that lifted me up, and I really tried to give everything I could to the team, said Rudy Gobert. It's a hell of a quote. We came up short, but I have no doubt we're going to win. Might be painful right now, but I guarantee that all of us will come back better. I'm going to come back better. We're going to come back better. And we're going to do anything we can that's in our power to be a better team next year. Donovan Mitchell, I'll go to war with any one of these guys in the locker room or any one of these coaches. We're continuing just to build chemistry. We went from being an unsalvageable team 3 months ago to this, and I don't think anybody outside expected this. We just got down here and we worked, and everyone just looked in from the rookies to the coaches, but we just got to do more. With Boyan coming back, not putting everything on Boyan, but with him coming back, it's another weapon. This won't happen again. In that big picture sense, that's where we are. But the season's over, and that sucks. Hate that. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street, also located in Logan and in Linden. Feel free, if you're going to look at a car right now, to at least include Hyundai on the list. Go stop by. And when you stop by, email me first so that I can set you up with a meeting. I'd like you to be able to meet Jason over at the Murray store, or maybe Blake or whoever it's going to be down the other, Linden. I'd like you to meet those guys because I think you'd find out what good people they are. I'd also like you to have that VIP experience. The Murdoch lineup of cars is just fabulous. The Kona is the quick little speedy SUV, smaller. Subaru has the Crosstrek. This is the Hyundai version. Some people think the Kona is actually a much better car. Go check it out. The Tucson, the Santa Fe, and now the Palisade is just on fire. That's the SUV lineup. I've been driving the Sonata. It is truly great. I mean, truly, truly great. So make sure you go check them out. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street, and in Logan and in Linden. Today's show is also brought to you by rockauto.com, a family business. Serving auto part customers for online for 20 years. They shop for auto parts, body parts, hundreds of manufacturers. The great thing about it is the catalog, simple, unique, easy to navigate, and you can see all the parts available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, prices you prefer. Unlike if you go into one of the stores, the only thing that you're getting there is what they have in stock. You're only getting at their price, and you're not getting a selection. That's where rockauto.com is different. You get reliably low prices, the same for professionals as a do-it-yourselfer, and you don't need to spend twice as much for the same parts. That's all at rockauto.com. They have everything from engine modules to carpets to tail lamps to motor oil. It's rockauto.com. Go there right now and write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, let's get to the Game 7 analysis specifically. and maybe the series as a whole. I think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of regret from the Jazz players. I just think when they look back at Game 6 and parts of Game 7, that they just didn't bring it enough. And I am not usually a believer in that stuff. Like, I kind of generally believe they always bring it. And that most of the night... But Denver started playing with a tenacity and a force in Game 5 and really in Game 6. And we never matched it until we were down 19. And that's, to me, a bit of a tragedy. Even in the first quarter, where you sometimes it will look like you're not playing hard because you're not making shots. Like, we had no offensive rebounds on 9 misses. Like, we had no free throw attempts in the first quarter. It just didn't feel like we were playing with the juice that we should have been playing with for a Game 7. Maybe, you know, maybe one of the players will tell me I'm wrong on that. I don't, it just didn't feel like it. I feel like there'll be some regret in that. In the second quarter, our offense went away. And frankly, our bench minutes became problematic. Like, we tried to run Juwan Morgan out for 6 minutes, and he went 1-for-4 on free throws and was -9 in 6 minutes. And I love Juwan Morgan, and I love the hope. But I will be honest, I decided not to tweet this because I thought it was kind of bullcrappy on my part to do this. But I was reading a bunch of people on Twitter, some people that are actually pretty smart, talking about how much, you know, Juwan, he played 134 NBA minutes. If we're relying on a guy who's got 134 NBA minutes to be major important in the answer to our playoff problems, then we're in trouble. Like, it's just too big a moment for that kid. He's going to be fine as a player, but not then. We didn't have a choice. Ironically enough, like, Ed Davis might have actually had value in this series after a season in which he didn't look right. But the bench hurt us. We went 5-18. We lost our shooting. We just, again, no offensive rebounds. So we had it's hard. Like, I like numbers to equate what I'm seeing with my eyeballs. But we had 22 misses in the first half and not a single offensive rebound. Like, to me, that's like, Like, I just didn't see the juice. Maybe, you know, maybe that's unfair. And our stars weren't very good, frankly. Like, as great as they're about to be in the second half, Donovan goes to halftime, 3-of-7, 5 turnovers. Rudy goes 3-of-4, 1 rebound in 14 minutes. Mike Conley goes 0-of-4, -14 in the first half. Now, partially because he plays with the bench. 5 assists, I'll give him 2 steals. Like, we just weren't, that's my bummer. Like, the part of me that's like, I got so many weird emotions today. Frankly, you guys are my therapy session today. Hopefully we're doing it together. Like, I'm so bummed the season's over. I just have the biggest, emptiest pit in my stomach that sucks. I'm sure you do too. And then I have regret. Like, I don't know what I think. Like, I just don't think we played hard in Game 6. And I didn't see the tenacity that I wanted to see out of the guys that I'm rooting for in the first half of Game 7. I didn't. And then Rudy's got 7 offensive rebounds in 24 minutes in the second half. He has 17 rebounds in the second half alone. Donovan gets 15 points. He's incredible. And there it was. That's what I wanted. And we played 6 guys, which we couldn't have done the whole, but that's the reality. And frankly, we didn't play Clarkson much. I think Jordan might have been nicked up. He didn't seem quite right. And so we rolled our guys out there. And we had a lot of the same little issues to look at, like Joe Ingles bypassed a shot, and Mike Conley's wide open bypassed a shot, and Royce O'Neal didn't pull the trigger on a shot. Like, we need you guys to shoot. Joe had 5 rebounds and 4 assists, so he got involved. It was nice. Went 3 of 15 on threes in the second half of the game. Game 7 impacted our guys. It's pretty hard to deny. Mike Conley playing his 4th game 7. He's actually had kind of, like, they haven't been great. We talked about it yesterday on the show. Like, his last game 7 before this was really, really good. He was 8 of 14. He didn't hit a 3, but he went 4 of 5 from the line. He had 5 rebounds, 9 assists. He had 20 points. They lost by 11 against Oklahoma City, but his previous game 7 against Oklahoma City in 2015, he was 7 of 19, or excuse me, against Clippers in 2012, he was 2 of 13. And then in 2011, he was 7 of 19. And so unfortunately, he adds a third, not great, but that, like, we needed Mike Conley. And Denver rolled their guys. Jokic took 17 shots. Murray took 14. They took 31 of their 44 shots. Gary Harris went 0 for 6, but changed the game. And Jamal Murray went 3 of 14. That knee to the thigh, pure exhaustion, who knows? And we started defending him better. We had Jokic, Ron Boone picked it up on the air. Jokic can't use his left hand on a shot. So we had him driving left hand. He always had to bring it back to his right hand, and Rudy's blocking it all the time. We got Murray going to his left, so he couldn't go left to right finally. Like, I did the whole breakdown early in the series. He wants to go left to right. We got him going left. He wasn't right. We did it. But we did it coming from 19 down. Incredibly so, frankly. Right? Like, that's where, like, on that level, like, holy smokes. We came from 19 down and actually had the lead by 3 with 8:06 left when Gobert laid it up. And then they just made great plays, too. Right? We're tied at 68. We tied at 68, 70, 72, 74, 76. Never tied at 76, 74. Murray hits a shot with 2:32 left, then Conley turns it over. Murray gets a layup, then Conley finds O'Neal on a gorgeous drive. We have a great defensive possession. We tie at 78 with 47 seconds left. Jokic hits that shot in the lane. And then that wild, crazy finish. If you watch Donovan's last turnover again, his ninth of the game, he spit. Gary Harris, you know, like, unbelievable. Gary Harris changed the series. But Gary Harris jumps the move, knowing he wants to go to his right hand, force him left, spider spins. And then they just have guys clogging the lane, not guarding anyone. Donovan comes to the front court, and Gary Harris, just great play, jumps out perpendicular to Donovan, out to his right shoulder, so Donovan has to spin. And then Jeremy Grant is just not guarding anyone. Like, I don't know who Jeremy Grant's supposed to be guarding, because I don't have any idea. It's probably Mike Conley. But he is actually on the left elbow, and Mike Conley's on the right side. Torrey Craig's on the floor, and they're just guarding the weak side two guys at a time. And then Harris reaches around and steals it, and then the madness and the three that almost goes. Ugh. Today's show is brought to you by The Store. I have a mudslide cookie in my bag. I didn't finish last night. That's how depressed I am. I didn't even finish my mudslide cookie last night. I might not be okay. I'm okay. The Store is located 6200 South and 20th East, also down at the Gateway. Friday, I believe the guys will be doing a show live from the Gateway location. If you want to stop by, Scotty and Hands will be down there. They'll have the wood-fired pizza out and rolling. It's super great. The sweet and sour is my fave. So if you get a chance, you might want to stop by and visit them there. They're located 6200 South, 20th East, also at the Gateway are the two locations. All the great community feel, super, super selection of items. And you know what? Just for today, go get the mudslide cookie. Like, just trust me, go get the mudslide cookie. It'll make you feel a million, million times better. So there's a lot of things to discuss. I mean, the whole, the like, losing a 3-1 lead. Jazz had never done it in franchise history. Denver had never won a 3-1 series. It only happened 12 times in franchise in NBA history. It's also in the bubble, so I don't know if it's the same. But we're up 15 in Game 5. We were up 15 in Game 5, and they surged, and we couldn't get the momentum back, and we didn't regain it for 8 quarters. And then, you know, the thought I have from a big picture standpoint on who we are, and I got to make sure I digest, you know, there's a sourness to what's happening right now, so you got to really digest some things. It feels to me that the creativity of the way we run our offense and what we do as a team during the regular season, it covers up some of our weaknesses and warts that then get exposed in the offseason or in the postseason. You know, one thing that Denver did, they did really, really well, is, and it's got two parts to it, and it, this is just kind of, the playoffs are a wonderful thing because they expose some warts. So there's three things that they kind of exposed here on in their defensive coverage, and we'll have to address them. So they were bringing two guys to the ball, and they were bringing two guys to the ball with often a Jeremy Grant or a Torrey Craig or a Gary Harrison in the last games or even a Michael Porter Jr., and they were bringing Grant at 6'9", Porter at 6'10", Craig at 6'7", Harris, I think, at 6'4", who, like, was a world-class football player at one point in his career. His mom was a WNBA player, Joy Holmes. Incredible athlete. He's had ankle, knee injuries that have kind of limited him a little bit, but incredible athlete. And they were trapping our 6'1 guards. Our guards are small, okay? So, like, we knew that. They're great. Conley and Donovan are great, but they're small. And so they that was, I thought, a huge part of the series, that they started putting a long, athletic guy on Mike, and he had a hard time getting through it. And then you saw that, and they started that kind of late Game 5, and in the last three games of this, Mike went 14 of 38, I think it was, shooting. It's not great. Right? The last, you know, and I bet you if I actually, you know, really dug into that one and looked at it, and we really started, we'd start that in the second half when P.J. Dozier started guarding Mike Conley in the second. Like, he struggled. Donovan had 9 turnovers. Like, when they bring two guys to our guys and they're 6'1", like, those, that pass had a lot of air on it. It was just, it's a good move. What they were then doing, part two, is they were bringing over anyone, Monte Morris, anyone, to get inside of Rudy. And I love Rudy, but Rudy is still not great if there's someone between him and the basket. That has always been Rudy's bugaboo offensively. And this is an example. Like, we run such great stuff. We do so much stuff during the regular season. Like, I think we cover it up. And in the playoffs, like, every little wart you have gets exposed. To the credit of, like, the brilliance of this league, not the weakness of our players. If your players were all perfect, they would be LeBron James and Michael Jordan. Like, your players are not perfect because players aren't perfect. I'm not trying to be critical. I think I'm trying to explain or be honest. I don't know. You can take it however you want. So that like, the Rudy struggled there. Like, they went and took that aspect of Rudy away. And if we looked at Rudy's shot chart for the series, anytime he was like 3 feet out, 4 feet out, with a guy in between him and the basket, it didn't feel like he finished very much late. And then they took one guy on the, they stayed strong side on our, and they took one guy usually on Royce O'Neal and Joe Ingles, and he just guarded the area, and he was able to get out because of their length a little bit. He was able to get out, and close out on Joe and so and Royce. And really, at that point, what you need is a quick release, 3-point catch and shoot from them, or you need something that's a hard drive to the basket. Royce is a pretty good go and catch if he's got a straight line, but if any help comes, it's not great. Same thing with Joe, or you got to just beat that guy on the closeout. And that's not really the strength of Royce O'Neal or Joe Ingles. None of those are. Like the super quick release three, Joe's got it, learned it, he's added it to his repertoire. The drive on both those guys, neither of them is beating anyone one-on-one in just a pure ISO. And so like those little warts got exposed in games 5, 6, and 7. That's really kind of what we saw take place. I don't know what that means. I don't really know what I'm saying, but like just analyzing the game, that's what I saw. And that's, Rudy, by the way, was 1 of 9 outside the restricted area in the series. Like, and I bet you we'd find that Royce and Joe on isolations weren't very good. And it's not that they weren't very good, they just don't do them. That's not who they are. And during the regular season, we just do, without that level of 7 games worth of scouting, we do a masterful job, players and coaches, of just making not get that, and the way the game works, you just don't get exposed on those same things. This is not unique to the Jazz, by the way. This is like everyone. And we could go through, like Michael Porter Jr. just got embarrassed for the first 4 games of the series. But like Joe Ingles ran 6 isolation plays in the entire postseason, I think, and Royce O'Neal ran 2. Like, that's not who they are. I don't want them running isolation. But basically, at a point in the series, Denver was able to say, we're going to force you to do that. I don't want Rudy Gobert taking 5 and 6 feet shots in the paint outside of the restricted area. But at a point in the series, Denver said, we're going to force you to do that. And to Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley, they said, we're going to force you to throw passes over guys that are 6'7 and 6'8. And then they got Gary Harris back, and it changed the series. And the other thing that really, to me, changed the series is we abused them in isolation one-on-one with Mitchell, Clarkson, and a little bit of Conley early in the series, I don't think we did late in the series. They really took away that isolation game because really, all the things I just talked about in regards to the into those little weaknesses. So what that actually forces the Jazz to do is to then play, spread the floor, drive, and get the blender going. Like that's what the Jazz went to. And to some extent, that's isolation. And bringing back Gary Harris just defending isolation and bringing back and not somehow avoiding Michael, changing Michael Porter Jr. out of the starting lineup so he's not getting humiliated by starters every play. Like, these things actually change the series to their, give them credit, frankly. Because then we went to this isolation game and we weren't as good at it, but we spread the floor and we drove and tried to create opportunities for our guys in that manner. All right, we'll keep talking about it. I don't know that I'll rewatch that game. I'm bummed. I'm assuming you are too. I mean, I love my Jazz and I love watching them and I want to watch more games. Right? I want to watch more games. I want to call another game. We don't get to do that. And that's totally depressing. I think it was, for all of us, probably a big picture, a level of bringing it back to normalcy. Right? Well, All right, we got an off season. Fire up. Don't mean to be depressing. I'm just trying to share with you. We'll get going. Jazz, big picture is the first segment that probably matters. Second segment is the frustration. Third segment's where we evolve. I don't know if you can handle Locked On Nuggets. I'm sure they'll do a good job. They've been great. That was actually a very enjoyable series with all the media. Locked On NBA is good. I'll be with Ben Golliver tomorrow. This has been Locked On Jazz. Have a great day. See ya.